I only finally made up my mind on Friday at lunchtime.
Did you agonise over the decision to stand down?
I'm not really an agoniser, Andrew. I take a look at things. I think, you know, when you get beaten in an election or referendum, then you have to consider standing down as a real possibility. I mean, I know taking responsibility in politics has gone out of fashion, but there is an aspect to which if you lead a campaign, and I was the leader of the Yes campaign, and you don't win, then you have to contemplate whether you're the best person to lead future political campaigns. And in my judgment, it was time for the SNP and the broader Yes movement and national movement in Scotland would benefit from new leadership.
And in your heart of hearts, through the campaign as the referendum day approached, you did think you were going to win?
Yes, I did. I thought for most of the last month of the campaign, I thought we were in for a real chance. And certainly in the last week of the campaign, I thought we'd pulled ahead. And I think the decisive aspect wasn't so much the fear-mongering, scaremongering, the kitchen sink being thrown at Scotland by the orchestration from Downing Street. I thought the real thing was the pledge, the vow, the offer of something else. And because a lot of people who had been moving across to independence saw within that a reason to say, well, we can get something anyway without the perceived risks that they were being festooned upon them.
You were only 5 points away from your dream. You won Scotland's largest city. There's now the prospect of substantially more power for the Scottish Parliament. Why not stay and be an enhanced First Minister?
Well, I think it's a good phrase, Andrew. But I think, can I say that I'm not going away, you know. I'm still going to be part of the political process in Scotland. If people in Aberdeenshire wish to keep electing me, then that's what I'll do. But I don't have to be First Minister of Scotland and leader of the Yes campaign to see that achieved. I mean, the SNP is a strong and powerful leadership team, and there's a number of people who would do a fantastic job as leader of the party and First Minister. And I've been leader of the party for the last 24 years. I think maybe it's time to give someone else a shot, and because there are many able people who'll do that job well. But I'm still intending to be part of the body politic in Scotland and the national movement who are arguing to take this case further forward. And I think you're right in the question to say that one of the ironies that's developing so quickly after the referendum, it might be that those who lost on Thursday, the Yes side, end up as the political winners, and those who won end up as the losers.
When we met just before the vote, a couple of days before the vote, you said to me there was very little you would change about the campaign strategy. Is that still your view?
Yes. I mean, there's one of two things that, like any campaign, there's no such thing as a pitch-perfect campaign. I'd prefer not to dwell on the things. I'm going to leave them for my book, which will be called 100 Days, which will be coming out before Christmas. And once you read that, you'll see I'll probably reveal the things that I would have changed. But basically, broadly, this was an extraordinary campaign, not just a political campaign, but a campaign involving the grassroots of Scotland and an energising, empowering way, the like of which none of us have ever witnessed. It was an extraordinary phenomenon of grassroots campaigning, which is what carried the Yes side so far almost to victory.
If Rupert Murdoch had put his Scottish son behind you, would that have made the difference?
Well, if ifs and ands were pots and pans, Andrew, I mean, who knows?
Why did he
by a number
out?
Of... I wouldn't say that. It's your term, Andrew. But you've got form with Mr. Murdoch that I don't have. So I'm not sure about that. But I mean, I was very encouraged, and incidentally, the coverage, not in the other papers, the Times, etc., which was extremely hostile, extraordinarily hostile, actually, to Scottish independence. But the coverage in the Scottish Sun was fair, balanced, and we certainly got a very fair kick at the ball from the Scottish Sun. I've got no difficulty. In newspapers, Andrew, I would settle absolutely for no editorial line and just balanced coverage. And we certainly got that from the Scottish Sun, and that was an encouragement. I think you saw from his tweets that I think certainly in his heart he would have liked to have seen a move forward in Scotland. And I welcome that, Stanley.
During the campaign, you said that if you lost, that was it referendum-wise for a generation. And you defined that as about around 20 years. Is that still your view?
Yes, it is. It's always been my view. It's a personal view. There are always things that can change circumstances in politics. You're aware of that. I mean, if the UK moved out of the European Union, for example, that would be the sort of circumstance. Some people would argue if the Westminster parties, and I'm actually not surprised they're cavilling and reneging on commitments. I'm only surprised by the speed at which they're doing it. They seem to be totally shameless in these matters. But if
you
that happens, some
meet
people
the
would
vow.
Argue that.
But, you don't think they're going to keep to their vow?
No, they're not for the essential reason that you saw developing on Friday, that the Prime Minister wants to link change in Scotland to change in England. Now, he wants to do that because he has difficulty in carrying his backbenchers on this, and they're under pressure from UKIP. Whereas the Labour leadership, of course, are frightened of any changes in England, which leave them without a majority in the House of Commons on English matters. So, you know, it's I wouldn't call it an irresistible force and a movable object, since one is resistible and one is movable, but nonetheless, they're at loggerheads. So, you know, I think the vow was something cooked up in desperation for the last few days of the campaign. And I think everyone in Scotland now realises that. Incidentally, the Yes campaign aren't surprised by this development. It's the people who were persuaded to vote no, who were misled, who were gulled, who were tricked, effectively. They're the ones who are really angry. So, you know, if Ed Miliband, I beg his pardon, and David Cameron are watching this, then I would be, I'd be worried more about the anger of the no voters than the opinion of the Yes voters on this matter.
If independence is, if I can put it this way, on the back burner for now, what would you advise your successor's strategy for the SNP to be?
I'd advise him or her not to listen to advice from their predecessor. A new leader brings forward a new strategy. I think this is, for the SNP, a very favourable a political time. I mean, there's been 5,000 new members joined up since Thursday, which, you know, is about a 25% increase in the party's membership in the space of a few days. But more than that, I think this is redolent with opportunity for the SNP. But, you know, my concern is really the opportunity for Scotland and how that can be moved forward. And I just want to repeat, Andrew, that, you know, I'm not retiring from politics. I'm standing down as First Minister of Scotland. You know, on Friday when I was coming up back to the northeast of Scotland, I passed through Dundee, which voted yes by a substantial margin. Mm. There was an old line of a song that I couldn't get out of my head. It was rewritten by Robert Burns. It's an old Jacobite song. And the last lines are, "So tremble, false Whigs, in the midst of your glee, you've not seen the last of my bonnets and me."
Well, that's very interesting. So what now for Alex Salmond? You staying a member of the Scottish Parliament? May we see you again in the House of Commons? What does the future hold for you now?
Well, the membership of the Scottish Parliament is entirely dependent on the good folk of the Aberdeenshire East, but I shall make myself available as a candidate, and if they choose to elect me, then I'll be delighted to serve. I've always loved being a constituency member of Parliament, incidentally. I think I've known some, I suppose, frontline politicians who regarded that as a chore. I'm not saying they didn't do it properly, I'm sure they did, but I love it. I think you get distilled wisdom from being a constituency member of Parliament, which helps you keep your feet in the ground and have a good observation as what actually matters to people. So I've got no difficulty with being a constituency member of Parliament. I think it's been one of the great pleasures in political life.
And can you promise me it will never be Lord Salmond?
Yes.
I'll take that as a promise. Alex Salmond, thanks for joining us.
Great pleasure, Andrew. Thank you.